This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Our goal at Everyday Tech is to keep your technology not only working, but working for you. I'm the host, Abram Nanny, and you can join me and my friends Wednesday mornings at 10 on MPB Think Radio. Or search Everyday Tech on your favorite podcasting app or download the MPB Public Media app.
From MPB Think Radio, you're listening to Creature Comforts, the show all about your animals and the animals around you. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Troy Major, veterinarian at the Animal Medical Center in Jackson, and Libby Hartfield, retired director of the Mississippi Museum of Natural Science. It's an all pet day on Creature Comforts today, so the doors to our pet hospital are propped wide open, and we're welcoming all pet questions from the big to the small. Do you have a cat at home, a dog, maybe both? We'll also take questions about getting an exotic pet like a rabbit, snake, or ferret. Don't hesitate to join our conversation with your phone call or email. And if you've had a general wildlife experience that you'd like to call in and share about, we'd like to hear that as well. You can email animals at mpbonline.org. And if you miss the Creature Comforts broadcast on Thursdays, it does repeat every Saturday morning at 6. And mentioning the email, recently our producer Abram was having some issues actually accessing the emails, but that issue has been resolved. So we're going to go through a couple of old emails on the show today. But in the future, we'll be able to give you a better response when you do send in something via the email machine. So good morning, Libby. Good to see you in studio this morning. What have you been seeing around out and about lately?
Good morning, Kevin. Oh, a lot. Let's say a lot's going on. This is the time of year when there's plenty to talk about on Creature Comforts. And in addition to this being nesting time for the birds, so we've got our permanent residents like cardinals and tufted titmice and Carolina wrens and Carolina chickadees. Those are the four common, I guess, around my house. And they're all nesting. I've had two nests of Carolina wrens fledge, so they've gone out into the world, new baby birds, and there have probably been more, but those are the two that I've caught. My most exciting fledging, though, I think, are from there's a pair of Phoebes that we've gotten. Well, for years we've had nesting Phoebes, and then we had kind of a knockback of our population and went a couple of years without any, and now last year and this year we've got them back, and we have little nesting ledges that we've built in the back of the house because they prefer to be on some kind of a ledge, and so it's a great place for their nest, and they nested in one of the ledges that Paul had built close enough that I can kind of stand at a distance inside the house and look out the window and see the nest just barely up in the top corner. But I've been watching four babies grow for the last few weeks. And then, let's see, I guess it was really, it was over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. It was obvious. I mean, they were big things walking around up there. It was almost harder to tell when the parents were still coming to feed them, but they were, you know, standing up and stretching out those little wings and stuff. And so I kept watching one day when there was a lot of movement, and I didn't get to see them actually fly off the platform. You know, I was doing too many other things. I had my priorities out of alignment, I think. I should have sat right there and watched. But anyway, I didn't get to see them fly away, but they did leave. I saw them in the yard a little bit, and then the last few days I haven't seen them at all. So I'm just trusting that the four little ones made it out, and hopefully we'll see them around the yard later. And let's see, what other than in it? So those are our resident birds. Then in addition to that, we've got these migrating birds that come up from South America, Central America, Mexico, the Caribbean. They've all been down there for the winter. And many of these are passing right through, going to Canada to nest. So that's kind of exciting to know we're just a stopover. We've had a lot of rose-breasted grosbeaks this week, which are a lot of fun to watch, and I've had more females than males this year, so I've been interested in that kind of, but they don't sing here, and they don't nest here, but they rest over for a few days. There's no way for me to know if these are the same birds every morning, but I'm told by bird experts that they're probably not, that they probably flew in. Maybe they stay maybe 2 days or so and then head north. So each morning when I see maybe three or four females and a couple of males, no way to know if that's a new bird every day or not. But they all look tired and hungry, so I'm assuming maybe they are new birds. And then we've got the hummingbirds on top of that. We've got a pair of summer tanagers. That's a part of the group of birds that migrate, but they do nest here. So but we have a pair of summer tanagers that are nesting. The male is a beautiful bright red, and she is a kind of a muted yellow, but she's a really pretty bird. And they have a special little talk they do to each other, a little patuck is what I call it. But they do these little sounds to each other all over the yard. And so that's fun. And usually I can see both of them if I hear enough of the little conversation and watch them, I can find them both. And we've had scarlet tanager, and they just kind of blow through heading north. We've got a prothonotary warbler nesting on the front porch now, the ones that I like to call the golden swamp warbler, which is their old name. And I guess a shout out to Sky Tompkins is a Mississippi craftsman who makes birdhouses. Well, he makes all kinds of ornamental things out of tin, out of metal, and really neat things, and I've always liked a lot of them. So he's made these little, looked like a gourd kind of little balls that hang, and they're made to be birdhouses, but primarily ornamental. I mean, you know, they're really decked out. I've got a fish and one that's made to look like a roseate spoonbill. And the prothonotaries really like these. They may have not been intended for real birds, but I've sent Sky some pictures, and I have a prothonotary warbler couple nesting in one. The hole seems to be too small for a cowbird to get in, but they also swing pretty freely, and the prothonotaries can deal with that, which is fun to watch. They'll get on the chain of our front porch swing, and even if the gourd is kind of swinging a little bit, the little house, they can make the, you know, they can make the adjustment, which is sometimes kind of fun to watch them, because it's just maybe, I don't know, not even 10 feet between those two points, and they'll have to redirect their flight pattern to get into the nest. But I guess that kind of protects them from the cowbirds too, because they do seem to fledge well, you know, to have babies come out of this nest and survive. So anyway, that's something that we're watching. And then in addition, of course, many people around the state are now hearing the periodical cicadas. And we'll talk about those next week with an entomologist who knows a lot about them. And there are a lot of weird stories on the internet about the cicadas, and I think many of them are true. So it's there's a lot going on. There's got a strange disease, too, that we'll talk about next week. And I got a listener sent a good photograph yesterday of a big wolf spider, big healthy wolf spider. They overwinter. Wolf spiders live 2, 3, 4 years, I think. So, but they're a nice big terrestrial spider that I've always thought they're good to have around, because I believe the stories that they eat roaches. I've never seen them eat roaches, but I think that's got to be true. So I'm happy with wolf spiders around the house.
Even if it's just conjecture, that's enough reason to keep them around.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, because they do kind of go the same kind of places where roaches would go. Although I see more wolf spiders outside than I do inside. And they're one of those spiders that carries the babies on their back. So if you see one, look close and see if there are any babies. But we didn't. There were no babies on this photograph. But it's early in the year yet. And spiders are kind of just coming into their own. They'll do better as the as things warm up. They like a you know, warm temperature. Most of our spiders do. And then the lizards are out. I've seen broad-headed skinks and fence lizards and anoles. And I imagine all of our listeners are watching those too. And again, I think of those as really good visitors because they eat the bugs that like to get in my house. And frogs are calling. I've had gray and green tree frogs. And the gray tree frog that can be so loud and shrill. So far, I don't have one anywhere close to the bedroom, so I'm happy about that. That gets to be a problem at our house if they're close. And the chorus frogs are still outside, the ones that sound like the comb sound. So hearing those, and let's see. We spent Tuesday night down in outside of Hattiesburg at Sweetwater Studios. They've got a little retreat center there. So we were there with friends celebrating an anniversary and saw lots of great birds down there. Did not see synchronous fireflies down there. If any of our listeners are on the Gulf Coast, they might want to call if they've seen, because the synchronous fireflies are probably, if they're out in Covington, Louisiana now. And I don't think I said that on air, did I? We talked about it. But yes, so synchronous fireflies have been seen in Covington, Louisiana. And that usually means, this is one of our markers, usually when they see them in Covington, we'll see them 2 weeks later at our house. So that kind of gives us a goal to start watching. But that also means they should probably be out on the Mississippi Gulf Coast and Alabama Gulf Coast as well.
This is Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. I think Abram, our engineer and producer, wants to chime in. Go ahead, Abram.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a story. So I've had this bird problem. It's not really much of a problem, but there's a bird that has been chilling at the top of our carport, or not the carport, but like the entrance to our house, and he hides in the corner on the ledge where the carport meets each other, and it doesn't make any sound. It doesn't nest. It's not doing anything until I come near enough to it that I don't realize that it's there. And then it flutters off real loud right in my ear and it jump scares me. Uh-huh. And then I jump and I square up on it and I'm like, what is happening? So I've got a couple of videos of me from my front door camera where you can't see the bird, but you can just see me randomly jump and put my hands up and stuff.
Try to get the bird in the picture next time.
I've got a picture. I'll come show it to you during the break.
Great.
But I'm not sure what it is, and it's not nesting or anything right there. It's just hanging out there. I don't know what it's doing.
It's a good safe place. It might be hunting insects from that spot.
Could be.
Is there a light there in the evenings?
We normally keep it off, but yeah. There is a there's a tree right beside there.
Yeah.
So
okay, we'll take a look at it.
Yeah, I'll show you the picture during the break.
Abram came in and showed us a picture of both the bird and the dive bombing attempt that it made, and we're kind of stumped here. So Abram's going to try to get another picture of him, and hopefully Libby will help identify what it is. But it's an interesting little bird. Looks almost in its face like an owl. But as I told Abram, if that thing dive bombed me on the porch, I think I'd jump out of the way too. So we will keep you update on what's going on there. So Abram, does it do this quite frequently?
Just about every time that I'm approaching it, it's always there. And I always feel so bad because I put my hands up like I'm going to punch it, and I'm not going to, but it just scares me so bad.
So like I said, we'll keep you updated if we can figure out what's going on there with the mystery bird in Abram's house. Thanks to Jeremy for holding on this whole time. But Jeremy, you're on the air with us now, so go ahead.
Hey, happy day, friends. I just wanted to report on the children's book happening in my backyard right now. So the gray fox has come back. A whole grip of bun-buns has just been hopping around. I hope a few of them make it with the fox hanging out. We are seeing two courting pairs, I think, of those ruby-throated, I think you call them fence lizards or whatever, but they're really showy and proud of themselves.
Yeah, is it the ones that can turn between green and and
they go
brown.
From green to brown or whatever.
Yes, those are anoles, A-N-O-L-E, yeah.
Yeah, and they're just so fun to watch because the males are so proud of their little throats, and the females are like, whatever.
But yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, what people call that, and showing off their money sometimes. They're showing
exactly. And then I have seen evidence, but not by sight. I've seen evidence of at least one raccoon just kind of doing his business in the bottom 40 kind of a deal. So it's just fun, to see all this life coming back. I'm looking forward to the synchronous fireflies. Thanks for bringing that up.
Great.
That's really cool. I have a point of contention with the wolf spider.
Oh.
Now, and maybe y'all can correct me, but I was always led to believe that they are considered slightly invasive, and they are the number one reason if a healthy wolf spider population is around, you will not see very many native forest frogs and toads because they just gobble them up like jelly beans.
Wow. Okay. I've not seen that problem, but that's, I have to do some reading and see if wolf spiders are gobbling up.
That could be a Northeast Georgia thing. I'm not 100% sure, but I was led to believe by a forestry student at UGA that if you see wolf spider, dispense of it quickly because we don't need any more of them.
Oh, okay. No, I've always revered them, so I do need to find out. I was bit by one once, though.
That's not fun either.
Yeah, no, it was on my thumb, and it didn't hurt bad, and then it got bad infected later. So I would say don't let them bite you. But, and to be honest, I think I was holding it. So.
One last little thing. I have seen a whole probably 15 or 20 over the past week of these bright blue, like they look almost like small softball sized bluebirds.
Yes.
No idea what they are, but they flit around and they're very fast.
Indigo buntings, and the males are just iridescent blue when the light hits them just right.
It looks like neon blue. It's so cool.
Yep, that's an indigo bunting, and the female has the exact same size and profile of that bird, but she's brown. She's pretty, but she's brown, So she can hide on the nest, and he can attract, I guess, predators away with that bright blue.
Yeah, they'll do the same kind of if they're laying, they will absolutely dive bomb you as well. But that's not what Abram's dealing with. Could it be an owlet that is just fledged and is learning how to do his owl thing?
It didn't look that much like an owl, but the reason we said kind of owl, he's got a face-on picture, and you can't see. The beak is all fuzzy, and it just looks very dark, but you see two big eyes. So I think that's the deal. It was all about the eyes, and he was face-on. So,
it very well could be anything at this point, I think.
Yeah, we'll have to get a better picture of him. But,
wonderful. I hope we get an update once we get some taxonomy done.
Yeah, and let us know if you continue to see your foxes too.
Oh no, they only come around like their area is very large where they roam, but the way that our backyard is, it's there's a nice brook coming through the very bottom of the property and lots of trees. It's basically native forest at this point. You can hear them. When I flick the spotlight on, you see the telltale eyes.
Uh-huh.
You're like, what?
Yep.
Who is that?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds really fun.
Sounds like a good habitat for a lot of things then.
Oh, yeah. So I'm sure there's gobs of stuff that I haven't noticed or haven't seen, but I do know that there are at least three or four very healthy and happy and courting barred owls just all over the place, caterwauling whenever they feel like it.
Oh, yeah.
It's really cool.
That's a great sound.
All right, Jeremy, great call. Thank you for calling in today and sharing that. And we would appreciate any kind of updates you have, too, of different things that you're seeing when you're out and about. So we do appreciate the phone call. In fact, Dr. Major, we do have an email here for you. It says, I have a 6-year-old rescue part Maltese male. He was maybe 2 or 3 when I got him and was not neutered. I've had a terrible time potty training him. He is neutered now, but I have to put him in a male wrap when I leave the house. Any suggestions?
Well, that's a great question and a common problem, I guess, in a lot of cases. How old did it? How old was he when he was neutered?
It says 6 years old. Or, well, I'm sorry. Yeah. He was 2 to 3 when they got them. It does not say when he was neutered, but it was between, I guess, 3 and 6.
Okay. I'm assuming that he's marking his territory type thing, which a lot of unneutered males will. And once it gets to be a habit, it's very hard to break. When I say habit, even after they've been neutered. I just wonder if maybe confining him in a kennel when you're not there and getting him out as much as possible. I have seen some of the neutered males that, what shall I say, converted or at least came around and stopped marking their territory, but a lot of it is habit. And certainly if there's any type of residual odor from urine, they will continue to mark that area. So it could be difficult. I wish I had better advice, but it sounds like they put a little wrap on the dog when they're gone.
Right.
And I just wonder if he actually urinates in his kennel. If they have a kennel, they can keep him while they're gone. But, yes, work with it. He may come around. I don't know how long has it been since he's been neutered. I would say that this gets to be a habitual problem and very difficult to control.
All right, very good. Got a couple of other emails here to share. This one says, I listen to your show when it replays on Saturday mornings, not from Mississippi, and I'm wondering what I'm hearing at dusk later at night outside my ground floor window. We have a large backyard, and it is two or several high-pitched chirps, but I'm quite certain it's not a bird. It goes on for a while. Is it a rodent? I don't think it's a squirrel. I just want to make sure they don't get in the house, so I'd like to know what we're dealing with. Any insight you can provide would be appreciated.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's those tree frogs that we were just talking about.
Okay.
Maybe a green. Look up a gray tree frog sound and a green tree frog sound and see if either one of those are what you've got.
Would they be trying to get into the house?
They might appear to be trying to get into the house because they'll come to the light. Like if you've got your bedroom light on, mm-hmm. they may be outside your bedroom window because they're hoping that that light will attract some insects that they can eat.
Maybe, you know, my cats love to see them on the glass. They're mesmerized for seems like hours.
Aren't they wonderful for cats? Yes, yes.
All right, and the animals also. I have a picture of one of my cats, and it's like this anno came to see the cat every day on the window ledge.
Yeah.
And the cat would sit there and just watch it, you know.
You know, sometimes the glass in a window, if the light is shining just right on it, in the early spring, it'll be warm there. And so a lot of times those little gnolls and frogs will get right up against the glass. So it's easy for you to see them.
Here's another email. This one says, this morning we saw bird behavior that never observed before. A cardinal perched in our red honeysuckle plucked one blossom after another off the vine with his beak and nibbled the stem end. After doing this for a couple of minutes, he flew off. Is this unusual?
No, that's a source of food for them. You know, the base of the flower is usually where the seed is forming, and the seed has a lot of protein in it. And so that will become a fruit in many, you know, in many kinds of plants. So I don't think that's unusual at all. I know we've got to me, the two best bird trees are mulberries and tulip poplars. And the tulip poplar flowers, that way they'll eat the base of the flower, sometimes bite all the way through it, so they get the stamens with the pollen and what's going to become the seed or the fruit.
I imagine a honeysuckle is not too dissimilar from like the sugar water you put in your bird feeder, right?
Yeah. So they're going to like the nectar too that they get because it's kind of drenched in that, but they'll also eat that protein in there. And there are also bugs in there. Uh-huh. Oh, I'm sorry, Troy. Yeah.
Sorry. I always remember seeing a flock of cedar waxwings in a blooming apple tree. In other words, had covered yep. with wounds. And it was the whole tree was just moving. There was probably 40 or 50. They traveled in pretty good-sized flocks. And they were doing exactly the same thing. They were taking the blossoms and, I suppose, getting whatever nourishment they could from those. But they almost stripped that tree pretty quickly because there were so many. But it was like the whole tree was moving with that many birds in it.
Yeah. Yeah, Pa calls them the gang at our house because they were out there this morning, and they'll be the first ones on the mulberry in the morning and
right.
just descend and kind of pick it over real hard. And the cardinals and everybody shows up a little later and get the leavings, but the gang can really wipe out a tree.
Well, the old saying, the early bird gets the worm, so it's similar to that.
There's a reason for that, right, yeah.
You're listening to Creature Comforts on MPB Think Radio. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Troy Major and Libby Hartfield. It's an all-pet day, so we're looking for your pet questions. Or if you've had any wildlife encounters that you'd like to share with us, we always like to hear those as well. Got a couple of callers on the line to get to. Let's start again in Starkville. Charlotte has called in today. Good morning, Charlotte. You're on the air with us, so go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. I have a question about bird feeders in my backyard. I've had them for years and years and years and years, and cardinals that I think permanently live at these feeders, and all of a sudden, last week, the birds disappeared. I have zero cardinals right now. A smattering of other things, but very, very few.
Wow, and you were using the same seed and...
Yeah, I mean, it's a brand new bag of seed, but I use black oil sunflower, and it's the same brand, the same everything.
No big changes in the neighborhood and anything that could have happened around you?
Only the cicadas.
Now, it could be. Okay. Yep. You may have hit the nail on the head. Yeah, because the cardinals are one of the birds that like to eat the cicadas when they emerge. They may just be full. Because that's a big meal. It's an easy big meal for them when the cicadas are out. So I would, I'm thinking that that's a good answer for what's happening.
Yeah.
You'll kind of know if they come back after the cicadas. Yeah, Troy. Yeah,
Libby, one other thing that happens, and I've seen it happen in my bird feeders, the presence of a hawk in the area.
Yeah.
A lot of times some of the birds are aware of that, and
yeah,
they will stay away from the feeder as long as that hawk is hanging out. And actually, the feeder is just like for feral cats. The hawk knows that the birds are at the feeder, and I've seen one or two times a hawk has struck and taken a meal at the feeder itself. So that's a possibility, and I suspect the cicadas are the main source right now.
A feral cat can also keep them away from your feeders for a while.
No.
So yeah,
we have some nesting hawks.
Yeah, so that could
be it. The birds know when they're around, and it's been years we've had those, and they have not discouraged the birds greatly.
Yeah, we'll see if it might be. And are you seeing a lot of cicadas right now? Are they emerging?
Not a lot, but every morning I see a few around.
Yeah,
the shells and the almost dead.
Uh huh. Yeah, so it's working.
I guess I was concerned that there could be some disease that even perhaps the migratory birds brought.
That's, you know, and I didn't want to bring.
I'm not seeing dead birds.
Yeah, that's always a possibility. If you see anything that looks sick, you know, they talk about there's a disease that finches carry, and you see like watery, crusty around their eyes, and sometimes one of the eyes will be matted shut. So if you see any of that kind of thing, you need to do a good cleanup of everything.
You know, one of the things that we have seen and may be recurring is the bird flu. They're even seeing some cases of bird flu in livestock now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's getting to be a serious problem. But what was that, 2-3 years ago, there was such a resurgence of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of poultry farms had to depopulate. Simply because it's widespread and can be very damaging.
Yeah, there was something in the news about that cow mane I think somewhere in Mississippi had to put down a bunch of birds because of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody talks about the cost of eggs, but one of the things that's happened, of course, is depopulating, and had in the Midwest especially, they had to depopulate the chicken farms in a lot of areas. So, anyway, that's a serious disease, and it probably is not what's causing the cardinals to not be there. Something else, like the cicadas.
Yeah, I'm going to go to a good reason first. Yeah, yeah. Let's hope
exactly.
That's it. Yeah.
All right, Charlotte, we appreciate your call. By the way, I always just like to give a disclaimer. I'm not related to feral cats. It's spelled differently.
Really? Really? Okay. Glad to hear that. Okay.
If I were a cat, I would stay inside all the time and sleep. All right. Let's move on. We've got Fletch on the line from Ridgeland. Good morning, Fletch. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. I apologize for the vague description, but I was visiting my mom in the Delta yesterday, and about 8 o'clock in the morning, she lives off Indian Bayou. There was a half a dozen gray or tan ducks flying in and out of pecan trees 30 or 40 feet up, just whistling. It almost seemed like they'd been startled by something, but I don't recall ever seeing ducks in pecan trees.
Uh-huh. Well, there is
a red or orange bill.
Uh-huh. There is a duck called a whistling duck. That is, some people call it a tree duck. And it's got kind of long legs, and it's an unusual profile when you see a few of them on a tree limb. I saw a bunch of them on Dolphin Island a few weeks ago. Look that up online. If you see the picture and hear the whistling, you might, if you're good at all with sounds, it might be easier to diagnose this or identify it by the sounds.
Is it a migratory duck?
Yes, it is. And I don't know very much about it. I need to read more about it. But, yeah, see if they're, because they were flying in. They were migrating in to Dolphin Island.
And it's a game duck?
It's called a whistling duck or a tree duck.
But is it hunted for game?
I've never heard of anybody hunting them.
Okay. All right. I will look it up. Thanks for the head start.
All right.
Great.
Fletch, thanks for your phone call. We're off to Boonville. Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Dr. Major.
Yeah, I had a thought about the dog that was marking his territory or still urinating in the house.
Right.
It might be wise to go online. I think there is an animal behaviorist at Mississippi State University Vet School, and there could be some help from somebody that has experience and some experienced knowledge about how to control that. So I would recommend that they check with Mississippi State Vet School and see if there's someone there that can help them.
Very good. All right, so our next caller is Kay. She's on the line from Boonville. Good morning, Kay. You're on the air with us.
I have a question and a comment about a summer tanager. We have one that visits every year, comes in about this time. It's been here about two weeks now and then leaves in the late summer. Where does it go?
They go to South America or to Central America, I believe. Okay. I need to, and to me that's one failing. Most of the bird books that identify the birds give you a great idea of where they go once they get to North America, but they don't show you where they're coming from. I have heard that to some degree that's because of lack of knowledge about exactly where the birds are going, but most people have figured those out now. I think most birds have been kind of figured out as to where they're spending their winters, but I know that they do go south to Central America.
Well, apparently this bird likes us because when we're outside, you can hear it nearby singing its little song.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it a lot this morning when I was at my barn sitting on a fence post.
Do you hear that?
As long as I was there.
Do you hear the little clucking or pituck, pituck?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe a bird to me.
Look for the female. She's yellow. And if they're making, particularly if they're making those little clucking sounds, it probably means that she's there too. And if he stays all winter and he keeps coming back, that's an indication that she's probably there.
Okay. I think I saw the female last summer, but so far I haven't seen her this year. And I don't, there was just that one sound, and it was just the one bird that I could see.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was just the male that was there. But he's...
Yeah.
And apparently they do like humans, you know, because when we're out, they sing to us.
They, you know, I feel that way too, that they almost come and watch you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I certainly look forward to ours every spring. I'm glad you've got them.
Well, I am too, and we've also had a indigo bunting this week, visiting the bird feeder several times. And one rose-breasted grosbeak, I think that's the right name.
That's right.
And a few other sparrows and some that I don't know. I'm going to find a bird book and see if I can identify them. But thanks for answering my question.
And I just looked on the summer tanager map, and they actually, some of them go all the way down into fairly far into Central America, Venezuela, Colombia, Peru, and then in all through Central America and Mexico.
Well, I feel very honored that it comes back, but could it be the same bird?
It may have come a very long way. Yes, there's good evidence that the birds do tend to go back to the same places. And They only live for a few years, but the theory is that if they have babies there at your place, the babies will come back. So that's why I was interested to see, to continue to have summer tanagers, you'll need to have those females too.
So let's start on the phone lines again. Bobby's called in from Pontotoc. Bobby, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Well, I want to know something. Y'all might can tell me. In 1968, Miss America was Diane Aiken, and she had a pet lion, which name was Leo, and he was an African lion, and he was the friendliest thing you ever seen. He wouldn't eat you or nothing like that. They raised him from a baby, and I just wondered, since y'all know a lot about animals, you might know what happened to Diane Aiken and what happened to Leo.
Libby, any idea?
I don't know. Troy might know that, though. He.
I don't have any information on that. I don't know. I guess we could Google it and try to find out. But as far as knowing anything about what happened to the lion or Diane Aiken, I don't know.
I had no idea. So we had a Miss America that had a pet lion?
Probably the only one.
Wow.
All right, Bobby, thanks for the call. Might do some research and maybe see if we can find out some more information for you. I'm not sure why that made me think of this, but something I saw online yesterday was interesting. There was a wildlife photographer I think it was a cheetah refuge somewhere in Africa, I think it was, and he fell asleep under a tree, and the cheetah came down and nestled next to him and started napping with him.
I saw that picture, too. I did kind of question that, though. What do you think?
I don't know. I would be very careful about upsetting him. I mean, you know how cats are when they're napping and you bother them. They get quite irritated. So
I wondered who took the picture.
Go ahead, Dr. Major.
Right, they may have been bottle fed. You know, you don't know what the story was as far as these. If it was a refuge, they could have been bottle fed, and maybe they wanted to nestle once. You know,
yeah. I've never heard of cheetahs being particularly aggressive anyway, and right. I had to think there's somebody else there because somebody's taking this video.
Yeah, yeah. But that's, I've talked before about how much I love going to a zoo, and that's the big cat exhibits I always love because those act just like your house cat, except it's this giant creature. So that's why I always love to go see them, because just to see the similar types of behavior. Let's stay on the phone lines. We're going to go next to Oxford. Bill has called in today. Good morning, Bill. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. morning. My name is Phil, and I'm a truck driver for T.D. Baker out of Water Valley, Mississippi. But I was in Valdosta, Georgia yesterday, and I saw this woman getting a pet out of the car, which appeared to be a dog to me. But when she got the pet out, it was a pig. And I thought it was so funny, you know, and I'm like, wow, man, God, it's just humorous, you know? But I really got to, I got great joy out of seeing that, and God be the glory.
Okay. That's great, Bill.
So, Dr. Major, pet pig, not too unusual, but not unheard of, I guess.
Not as common as it might have been 15 years ago. There was a big wave of people that had, especially the pot-belly pigs, the smaller pigs. But, yes, pigs are very smart, and it sounds like this one was perfectly happy going for a ride. So what can I say? But I haven't seen many pet pigs lately.
All right. Bill, thanks for your call. Let's go next to Mobile and invite Mary into our conversation. Good morning, Mary. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have a question about Mandina berries. I have a lot of Mandina on my property, and I was wondering if they are toxic to birds. I had heard that they are toxic to some kinds of birds.
That's exactly, yeah, that's what I've heard, too, that they're toxic to a lot of things. And I removed the Nandina that was on my property because I just thought it's not worth it. You know, you certainly don't want grandchildren around them. I don't know if they're – are they dangerous for pets, Troy, Nandina?
I would say yes, and I would – I'm not a big fan of Nandina. One of my favorite plants that has berries is the pyracantha. And always remember the mockingbirds and the cardinals getting drunk eating so many of those. But they didn't die. They just kind of enjoyed it, I think.
Yeah, I would replace the Nandina if you can with something with good berries for our native wildlife.
And Mary, always a suggestion. You know, the Gestalt Gardener, Felder Rushing, his show airs Friday mornings at 9 on MPB Think Radio. So you might want to give him a call tomorrow and see if he might have something that could replace those in your yard and get more information on that. So we appreciate your call. Let's wrap up the show with this last email. And this is something, Libby, I think that you've dealt with in your yard. But it says, for the past month or so, one or more birds have chosen our house and vehicles to pick on. Tapping at our windows and transom starts around 7 a.m. and goes on throughout the day. I tried covering their primary target with black construction paper, but the birds just moved to another window. I've seen both a bluebird and I believe a wren pecking away. Our cars are also under attack. We've seen the same bluebird tapping on the windshield, sunroof, and side mirrors. Visitors' vehicles get the same treatment. Very embarrassing. The noise is annoying, but the resulting mess is maddening. Any suggestions on how to deal with this?
I understand your madness, yes, and I got an email from a listener yesterday about it, too, and they're just really hard to discourage. I would say if you can put window screens on any of those windows, do that. That's what solved it, really, at my house, is we put window screens. We've ended up putting them on all the windows, and that did take care of their problem there. Of course, now they're on the cars. But mostly, I had a mockingbird that I eventually tried to – I gave him a couple of mirrors, and he played with the mirrors and stayed away most of the time. I didn't completely. If he was close to the car, he still might go over there and mess with it. But you could try, you know, just have to be creative, I think, and keep trying things. But window screens are the easiest all-purpose solution.
Yeah, I remember when we talked about that on the air, and you did say you did have some success with the mirrors and the trees and to maybe lure them away. And so that would be another thing if you could somehow divert their attention away from the cars and the house and to somewhere else. But
that never worked with anything except for that one mockingbird. I didn't ever see anybody else use any other birds play with the mirrors, but it distracted him.
I remember used to be a season ticket holder with the Mississippi Braves, and I remember there was one seat in particular that I don't know why they ever sold it as a ticket because it always seemed to have bird droppings on it because of the birds. And it was just that one particular area, but they had the the fake scare owl and that sort of thing, but that it didn't really seem to be too effective there either. That's going to wrap us up for today. Creature Comforts is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio. To hear today's show or a previous show, you can visit creaturecomforts.mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Media app for your smartphone. Our show is produced and engineered by Abram Nanny. So for Dr. Troy Major and Libby Hartfield, I'm Kevin Farrell. Stay tuned. Up next, it's AutoCorrect with Coach Charlie Belton. We'll be back next Thursday at 9 for Creature Comforts, heard only on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.